Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 11th, 2017. Happy birthday, Brother Joe. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. As always, wonderful to have you here. So, D.R., over the last few days, our erstwhile commander-in-chief has been visiting his summer home, his palatial summer home that will someday be flooded out, but that's a different story. He's been down in Florida. The president has been in Florida being visited, having a summit with a man named Xi Jinping, who is the president of China, which is the largest, basically the largest country in the world from a population perspective. So tell me, DR, can you tell me what we were anticipating to have happen there? And we're recording this before the summit actually happened. So if we're a little out of sync, if Mr. Xi Jinping and President Trump get together, shake hands, and agree to fight climate change wholeheartedly, well, that'd be great. But what's the prospects for a meeting?
The prospects for a discussion going into the discussion seem to be pretty remote. Obviously, you know, it's unlikely that President Xi would have a discussion with the man who blamed him for allegedly creating what Trump regarded as a hoax. Okay. And it's just very interesting, you know, how fascinating it is. 2.5 years after President Xi and President Obama had the meeting where they hammered out essentially a deal between the United States and China to mutually cap greenhouse gases, the deal that was sort of the linchpin for the Paris Climate Agreement, to go from there to now, as China is now, you know, planning to surpass the United States, which has decided to basically, on a federal level, walk off the field in terms of reducing emissions. So it's just fascinating to see, you know, two countries, both of whom have been at various points the world leader in emissions, and how one country has decided to basically stand down while another country has decided to stand up in the fight for a habitable planet.
Yeah. Well, I think that regardless of what did happen or will happen at this summit, the bigger story is a longer-term story, I think. It's my feeling that it's safe to say that there will be no breakthroughs on climate that come out of the summit at Mar-a-Lago. Nothing's going to happen there. But the trajectory, the forces at work, from what I've seen, are that China is enthusiastically anticipating the United States' withdrawal from the climate scene, because that basically gives China free play to establish itself as a global leader, both in specifically in clean energy, but also with all of the soft power that comes with being the responsible leader of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything about that kind of a perspective?
Yeah, there have been a number of stories to that effect that, you know, as China takes the lead, China gains international respect that the United States is losing under Trump's alleged leadership. Mm-hmm. And it will be interesting just to see, you know, depending on how long Trump is in there, once he's gone, the next president, presuming that the next president is somebody who accepts science, how much work will that president have to do to sort of get the United States to catch up on a federal level after the years of abandonment, the years of living dangerously, so to speak, that we're experiencing under a president who decides not to compete with China on the issue of clean energy?
Yeah, from what I've seen, I mean, I think that, of course, China is an authoritarian government, so let's just stipulate that, right? Mm-hmm. That gives them an advantage that if the highest echelons of the Chinese government decide they want to make clean energy, they can just order it to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how it goes. And they seem to be making good on those commitments, right? I read somewhere they've canceled 100 coal plants or something that were going to be built, and they're pushing for oh, I forget the date, but sometime fairly soon, 20% of their energy coming from solar panels and wind turbines. So 20% of China's energy coming from renewable sources is really quite a feat. And from what I've seen, I mean, the rationale is not because the Chinese government is noble particularly, but they... It turns out that the pollution in China from the coal plants is so horrible that it is becoming a domestic political issue, right? Have you seen anything like that?
Definitely. There is a political demand for action on reducing emissions in China. And also, you know, as we've noted before, China also recognizes this as a growth opportunity. China recognizes that coal is not coming back, the difference between President Xi and President Trump. China recognizes that, you know, clean energy is the wiser investment, the more logical investment, the more, you know, again, there's just no rational basis for going away from clean energy. Whereas when you have a country that's governed by irrationality, you see this rush on a federal level away from investment in clean energy.
And I mean, I've seen where the Chinese government is aggressively building renewable energy systems, among other infrastructure, in large parts of Africa, in Saudi Arabia, in the Middle East. That money is coming in from China. And of course, you have then decades of gratitude and connection when you come into a country and make that sort of growth possible. It's back to the soft power that we are allowing China to apply in the green energy space with all the attendant benefits they're going to get. It's not a, I don't know, it's make China great again. I think that this is the long-term fallout of what Mr. Trump is doing.
It's just sad to think of, you know, America going from leading to following now.
Of course, here in the United States, we've heard Mr. Trump has talked about the coal plants, and if you have not heard, there are several other credible reports of even of coal company executives saying that coal jobs are not coming back. I mean, we are not going back to the circumstance where lots of guys would get in the man car and go down 400 feet in the ground. I mean, it's just not how it's done anymore. And the expectation that that's going to come back is, you know, I read, was hearing somewhere, you know, what was the romance? I mean, why would a guy like Trump connect to this industry, which is a small industry? You see the jokes online about how, you know, after Trump reinvigorates the coal industry, he's going to restart Netflix and bring back the photomat booths to develop your film, right?
Exactly.
These industries that are gone. But there is something very romantic people have in their head that they are a coal mining state. I think people do carry these images of the strong, unfortunately, the strong white male, you know, carrying the economy on his back. I mean, of course, that is an appealing image of you know, people committed to their community. But it's just a strange sort of political, almost hypocritical usage of that kind of imagery, I guess. I don't know.
There's also a psychological thing going on. I think that to Trump, coal mining symbolizes machismo, the same thing that motivates one to sort of, you know, dig a coal mine, motivates one to sort of engage in groping behavior, for want of a better phrase. But it's interesting, you know, when these guys run around talking about the war on coal being over. You know, the war on coal was launched not only by fracking, but also by automation. So you think about that old Lee Dorsey song, you know, working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. The reality is that work in a coal mine is going down, down, down as a result of these factors having nothing to do with environmental regulation.
And I guess I don't mean to be dismissive of the people who are, you know, in these areas that have lost, that the industry's gone away. I mean, the real question is, how do you rebuild a vital economic base, right? You know, and you can talk in very macro terms about, you know, how, you know, there are towns that exist just because it's a railroad crossing, right? And if the railroad goes away, then the town has no reason to exist, right? Much of But much is the same, I think, in some parts of that depend on coal mines. If the coal mines go away, there's no reason for that town to be there unless there is government help to try and provide a different path for people to have jobs. Everyone wants a job from every part of the world, every person. And the question is, how do you get those jobs back and at the same time get jobs in Flint, Michigan and all the other places, right? I mean, that takes an activist government to commit to providing education and training for the entire population. I don't know.
And you can retrain these individuals in clean energy, but the problem is, you know, those investments are not occurring under this administration. In fact, the new economic base is being built in China, not in West Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that along the Appalachian, there's all these mountain peaks. You could have wind turbines up and down the whole thing, right? You could have all kinds of industry there. And I think that it's a sad thing. But the take-home lesson of the China summit is that China is winning. I mean, I think I heard some report on the news saying how the people that are coming with Xi Jinping from China have been studying the United States for decades, right? Mm-hmm. They know, they've been through multiple presidents. They know exactly what they want. And facing them, you have people that have been on the job for 3 weeks, didn't think they were going to win the election anyway. They're a skeleton crew, and they're led by Jared Kushner, who's 36 years old and doesn't know anything, right? And this is these are the people that are looking across the table at these experienced. And the real question is, whether the Chinese are going to play Trump for a chump, right? They easily could. They already did it to, Tillerson, right? They got him to use the words that are in their talking points.
Several years ago, Bob Inglis, the former Republican congressman who's now a carbon pricing advocate, he had a great line where he said that, you know, while we're debating the science, China is eating our lunch on clean energy. And it's an ironic line in the sense that when you think about China eating our lunch and how, you know, intellectually overmatched people like Jared Kushner are. Jared Fogle has more qualifications to basically run the government than Jared Kushner.
So who's Jared Fogle? Is he from America Wants Talent or something? Is he...
Subway.
Okay. Oh, Subway guy. Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, yes. Well, that's a whole other set of concerns, isn't it? But, so there you go. There's the China summit. Let me tell some people about some of the things that are coming up at MCAN over the next few weeks that you might want to familiarize yourself with. I'm not going to put up all the specifics because you can go to the MCAN website, the event page of the MCAN website, or you can go to the Facebook page where there's event listings for all these stuff. But on the 19th of April, at 8 in the evening, MCAN will be having an online webinar to discuss the legislative agenda that we are proposing and will be working on. So if you're interested in finding out what the hot topics on Beacon Hill are, here's a good chance. And you can do it from the comfort of your own home in almost complete anonymity, right? You can just sit in and listen. If you're not in Massachusetts, it still might be interesting. I encourage you to sign up and take a listen. On April 22nd, the Science March will be held both in D.C. and in Boston. So in Boston Common, there'll be a big march in support of the legitimacy of science, which is a sad thing that we have to have a march to support scientists, but there you go. That's what's happening. On April 29th is a big the People's Climate March. That's also going to be in D.C. and in Boston. I'm going to be going down to D.C. There are buses leaving from Massachusetts. In fact, we'll put up a link. There's buses from everywhere, but you can still catch a bus. There'll be a big march in Boston Common. There'll be an MCAN group. So if you want to connect up with the MCAN group, you can go to the page and sign on, and you'll get connected. May 3rd is a Wednesday night in Lincoln, Massachusetts. MCAN and the Massachusetts Audubon Society will be presenting a movie night for for kids and for families, and it's the movie is called Young Voices for the Planet. It's a discussion topic, and it should be very interesting. So that's 7 o'clock in Lincoln, Massachusetts. So, and then, of course, the most important date that I'm going to remind everyone that they need to put on their calendar is November of 2018. You should make a point of getting ready to vote, because that's the most important thing that you can do between to fight climate change between now and then, right?
Exactly.
There you go. There's the calendar. We'll put up links to most of what we talked about in this show at the blog. Again, it's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at Mass Climate Action. There's a link to the blog and the show. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. Turns out recently we got on Google Play. So if you have an Android phone, maybe not so much an iPhone, but an Android phone, you can find us on Google Play. I tweet at TedMcIntyre100, and DR, who is much more prolific than I am, tweets at DR Tucker. Right, DR?
That's correct.
So there you go. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. It was great chatting. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.